Okay, so here we are. Good morning, Nick Bushak. Welcome to Blind Ambition. And it's all about, oh, my pleasure. I'm glad you're here. Jem is awesome. I had the pleasure of speaking with your, I guess, co-founder, co-CEO, Steve, a little while ago for a Forbes piece. So fortunately, I'm all up to speed with all the great things you're doing. And maybe Rick can kind of give a more formal introduction, who you are, what you do, and then I'd love to hear about your career journey.
Sounds great. So I'm Nick Bushak. I'm one of the founders of Jem. Jem is about 200 people now.
Wait, how many people?
200, yeah.
Wow.
We've been grown really quickly. We build recruiting software. While you may not realize it, a lot of recruiters at some of the world's top companies use Jem. Recruiting teams at places like Coinbase, Lyft, Asana, Twilio, Square. We build software that powers a lot of these recruiting teams that are hiring some of the world's best people. A little bit about myself. I'm Nick. I'm one of the co-founders of Jem and the CTO. So I lead engineering, product, and design at Jem. And before that, I started my career at Facebook, where I spent 6.5 years leading a few different product engineering teams.
I want to kind of start there. So on Blind, we have tens of thousands of Facebook, now Meta, employees. And I assume some of our users actually might have worked with you or know you. And so I'd love to kind of dive in, like, what was it like managing a team of dozens of engineers at Facebook or at Meta?
Yeah, it was great. I think Meta and Facebook have a ton of really smart, really motivated people. And it was great just being able to support those folks and work with them on a lot of like really cool projects. There's a ton that happens at Meta and Facebook that's really exciting. The scale is really exciting, and overall it was just really fun to be able to work with great people.
So when you were at Facebook, you had the opportunity to work abroad, I believe in London. Mm-hmm. How did that international opportunity come about?
Yeah. So this happened, I guess, like around 3.5-4 years into my career at Facebook, at the time I was working on Facebook's business profiles and ads, the Facebook ads team was actually acquiring an ad tech company called LiveRail, a lot of their engineering team was based in Romania, and so actually a lot of those engineers were going to be joining Facebook London, and so they needed a few experienced engineers and engineering managers to be part of the landing group in Facebook London and help that team, the acquired team, get connected into Facebook and set them up basically for success at Facebook London. And so I was offered that opportunity and was really lucky to have been offered that opportunity. Moved over to London for 8 months. It was really great. It was always on my bucket list to go and live in a different city. It was also really cool to learn about all the challenges associated with acquiring a company really kind of setting up an acquired team for success within a larger company. It was also really interesting for me to see some of the challenges associated with being a remote office, the Facebook London office, which at the time was one of a small number of offices for Facebook, other than their Menlo Park office that actually had engineering, product, and design. And so there were some interesting thinking about sort of how collaboration would happen with headquarters and some of the challenges associated with that. So it was a really, really great experience and a great learning opportunity for me. The one thing I would call out is, at least in my mind, it was pretty important for me to come back to the Bay Area, and call me old school now, but at the end of the day, the Bay Area, you know, just has a ton more tech and much larger sort of tech community than other cities in the world. And a lot of my network was here in San Francisco in the Bay Area. And so, you know, I really enjoyed my time in London, but knew that I would want to come back to San Francisco in the Bay Area in the long term. And, you know, sure enough, that was actually, you know, it was through the Bay Area and, you know, through sort of, you know, the people that I knew who were here, that I ended up teaming up with Steve Bartel, my co-founder and starting Gem. And I think, you know, that's one thing I would call out for folks is that, you know, location, I do think also sort of matters in terms of setting up your career, and to, you know, always be thinking through kind of where you have the biggest network and kind of, you know, your long-term career growth and long-term network.
That's an interesting point, Nick. So that, you know, there's so much talk about remote work, and in the tech area, from what I see, it's so hard to find talent that they're getting people from Romania, from Ukraine, from Latin America, you name it, from Africa. But I guess it still is important to kind of be in the ecosystem where it's dominant. So if like you want to be in Wall Street, you probably should be, you know, in New York City as opposed to somewhere else, even though you can do the same work from your home.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and again, I think, you know, things are gradually shifting over time. And, you know, within Europe, London is one of the best for tech. But you know, when you look at like the sheer concentration of number of engineers and number of tech companies, along with, you know, the number of you know, venture capitalists and venture capital funding, it is still pretty concentrated in the Bay Area. And so, you know, depending on what your career goals are, that could be pretty important. For me, I knew that I always wanted to either, you know, work at a smaller company or start a company. And so that's a, you know, big reason why I've tried to, you know, mostly stick around San Francisco and the Bay Area.
Why a smaller company or startup as opposed to kind of staying with a large organization? Because a lot of people on this on blind side and just generally, it's some people always wondering what am I better off doing?
Right. Yeah. Let's see. So for me, you know, one of the most important are we gonna be okay to
No worries. So because it's sometimes it's just a gut feel, right? Sometimes it's not really you know, as a tech guy, you're probably very analytical and you could kind of write down all the bullet points. Sometimes it's just kind of emotional based, maybe, totally. Right? Just like a gut feeling, hey, you know what? I just feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, you know, I knew as a kid that I always wanted to do like a smaller company, which is kind of weird to know that as a kid. But I was really into computers as a younger person. I read Bill Gates's autobiography, and so I heard stories of like Silicon Valley, and it just like sounded really exciting in the early stages of a company. And that's, you know, it's not for everyone. I think for me, I just had this, you know, romanticized notion of it in my head. And you know, read a lot of like of the content created by Paul Graham, you know, all through high school and all of that. And so, you know, I knew that I wanted to do something smaller. And I actually interned at Facebook when it was around 500 people in 2008. And so, you know, it was still relatively large at that point, but it still felt, you know, pretty startup-y in my mind compared to my earlier internship at Apple. I think that was always in the back of my head. Even when I started full-time at Facebook, I remember thinking, oh, this is actually like a little bit big for me. And, you know, it was still growing really fast. It was a great place to be and a great place to start my career. Yeah, you know, I think in the back of my head, I was always trying to optimize for the sort of smaller company and potentially like starting a startup. And actually, even when I was at Facebook, I was thinking about what skills am I going to need when I, you know, eventually join a smaller company and startup.
So once you did it, so you made that. A lot of people say, I want to do something and they never do it. So I give you credit that you held to, you know, what your goals, and you made it happen. So then when you started up, did you have a moment like, oh my goodness, I didn't think of this. Is this what I really wanted? Or was it, no, this is what I want and I'm going to go do whatever it takes to make it work? Like, what was your mindset?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I kind of, I had assumed that it was, you know, a lot of the challenges were the ones that I had just read so much on the internet. And so I wasn't super surprised. If anything, I don't know, it sounds weird to say that I expected it, you know, to be like harder in weird ways. Cause I, you know, kind of like psyched myself out from, you know, I think there were just a number of, you know, I think you hear like a lot of like real horror stories of things that aren't going well and all that. And, you know, to be fair, it's a long journey. And so I'm sure Gemma is going to have part, you know, in every company there are periods where things get really challenging. It's not to say, you know, things haven't been hard. I mean, I think I've had to like grow a ton, especially on things like hiring. At the end of the day, if you get into this at some point, but startup founder, most pretty much, you know, what you're spending most of your time on day to day is hiring. But yeah, you know, overall, I did kind of mentally, you know, prepare myself for you know, a challenging time, and it was something that I kind of knew and expected and had prepared myself for.
That's also good advice, because like what you're saying is you were managing your own expectations, but managing it so thinking it's going to be way harder than it was. So then when it wasn't maybe as arduous, you're like, oh, all right, this is okay. This is really good. Because you're probably prepared for the worst, reading everything you were, talking to people about it, probably hearing horror stories from other startups. Then you're like, oh, all right, I'm prepared for this. So then when it happened, and then because sometimes if you're prepared for that mentally and it happens, you're like, oh, okay, I was expecting this. This has happened. Everyone said this is going to happen. It did. So I'm par for the course. I'll just keep plugging along.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it's been a great ride so far. And I've learned a ton, even in the 5 years that I've been working on it. So.
So how did you get to meet Steve? And then when or how did you come up with the idea of Gem together?
Yeah, let's see. So met Steve in college at MIT. And so I've known him for a really long time now. We were both, you know, in the same class year, both studying computer science. You know, spent some time doing class projects together in school, and also knew each other pretty well socially. Steve and I actually lived together when we moved out here to San Francisco, while he was at Dropbox and I was at Facebook. I think we stayed in touch, especially socially, when we were out here. I think it just so happened that, you know, both Steve and I were thinking about our next thing at around the same time. Steve had just taken a little bit of time off and was eager to kind of get started on something. And I was at a point at Facebook where I'd been there for 6.5 years and, you know, I think felt like I was getting close to the point where, you know, I felt like I learned more by being, you know, somewhere else, although I wasn't really sure what that would look like. And again, like I mentioned, it, at least in my head, it was either, you know, joining a smaller company or starting one. I think was seeing, you know, hanging out with Steve socially, and he mentioned, you know, kind of that he was looking to start something and was starting to think through a few ideas. So, you know, Steve and I hung out, did some nights and weekends brainstorming. I think it had gotten to the point where we realized that we weren't going to be able to make a ton of progress without actually going full time. And so that involved me actually having to leave Facebook. And ultimately, you know, got there and took the job. I think it was tough for, you know, for example, like my parents at the time.
I was just going to ask you about that. Like, yeah. What did your parents say when you said, "Hey, mom, dad, you know, you just spent a fortune for me to go to MIT and I'm at Facebook, but nah, I'm going to start this up with Steve."
Yeah.
how was it? Sure. Because were they nervous for you? Were they like, "Hey, don't do it," or were they like, "Hey, I support you"?
Yeah. I mean, my parents have been really, you know, supportive each step of the way. I think it was a little bit hard to compute, you know, leaving without, you know, yet having a company that already has revenue. You know, I think there was a little bit of this perception that you could make a ton of progress on starting a company while you were still holding a full-time job. And I think that's definitely true for some people, but you know, I think it became pretty clear to me, and this is something that I've heard from other startup founders as well, that to actually be able to focus 100% and you know, do the things that you need to do, and in our case, actually interviewing a ton of potential customers, you kind of had to be working on it full time. And I knew this from kind of all the research that I had done on starting companies and all of that. And to be fair, I was lucky enough to have, you know, some money saved up, right, with Facebook, that I could, you know, I could actually take this job. And that's not something that everyone can do. But yeah, you know, I think I had kind of went back and forth with my mom on this, and eventually she sort of came around and she understood it. But it's definitely not intuitive to people who aren't in the middle of startup land and Silicon Valley.
So they had no attachment to like the tech world, so they couldn't relate to what you're going through, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, my mom works in sales at sort of like an educational software company, so she has some visibility into the tech industry, but it's still non-intuitive, you know, in terms of the actual sort of founding story and the people that have, you know, started companies. You know, she had some visibility into this sort of stuff, but it was still pretty counterintuitive. Yeah.
I mean, invisibility to the startup founder CTO role, you mentioned recruiting. What else does the day-to-day look like for a CTO?
It is a lot of recruiting. So, I think, you know, and this is maybe a little bit of a, you know, call out for Gem, my company, but, if you talk to like any startup founder or really any leader in a fast growing, innovative company, you know, most of them will tell you that, you know, it's always one of their top three priorities to hire the best people. When you think about, you know, the knowledge worker, economy, it's no longer about like the number of factories you have as a business. Like, people are what make up the value of every business nowadays. And so recruiting and hiring are always sort of super top of mind. And actually that's what I'm spending, you know, probably 50% plus of my time on personally, is just hiring the team to build Gem.
So what do you run into? Is it just because there's so many opportunities out there that you have to have a story to kind of get them to go to you, as opposed to go to so many other different, you know, tech companies?
In terms of like, what is the time of recruiting going to, and why I'm sort of spending that much of my time on recruiting?
No, like, is it the war for talent that you're engaged in, that it's just so hard to find top tech talent that you just have, if you want to get that before somebody else gets that, or steal some away from another company, is that the battle that you're constantly kind of fighting?
I think at Gem, we're really proud of the team that we've built, and we just want to like hire the very best people, and of course the very best people have a lot of options. You know, we probably spend more time on hiring, you know, the best people, you know, compared to just hiring, you know, kind of okay people to like, you know, fill the seats. And so that does just take more time. It's, you know, on our engineering team, it's a little bit of a longer interview process, you know, in a way that hopefully is actually good for the candidate as well. We just spend more time with them and they get to see what it's like to work with us. And then, you know, it's also around building relationships over a longer period of time. That's actually one of the things that GEM does, is that, you know, GEM is basically this database for your passive talent relationships. So companies can actually, you know, engage with talent over a longer period of time, because a lot of times the very best people aren't looking for a job. You know, there's only a certain window when people are actually exploring new opportunities, and you want to be able to catch them at the right time. And so, yeah, you know, I think a lot of the time is spent, you know, spending a lot of time with candidates, making sure they understand the business. It's also, spent just nurturing some of the best people like we worked with in the past, in the hopes that, you know, when the time comes that they'll actually choose to work with us.
So when you were building out your early engineering team at GEM as a startup founder, did you have to rely a lot on your network, or did you find it easy to kind of inspire others to hop on, or was it a mix of both?
Yeah, you know, I think it was actually a lot of network in the early days. You know, the first two hires that we made were classmates from MIT, which was kind of cool. You know, I would have thought that, you know, I guess the first few hires would have been from, you know, Dropbox and Facebook, which were more recent places that we had worked. But it actually turns out that, I suspect that the length of time you've had a relationship with folks is a big factor in making that sort of initial jump. And so, you know, our first two hires were from classmates from MIT. After that, I think the next few were people that Steve knew from Dropbox. You know, I think hires were sort of through like a lot of like conversations. You know, we were kind of nurturing a list of people that we knew were really great people, and you know, we're getting coffee with them and things like that. And it is definitely challenging, you know, the first few hires. A lot were originally, you know, through the network, but it was also just like a lot of time spent, you know, getting coffees with a lot of people, and eventually like finding the ones that would end up being the founding engineers of the team.
Have you found now that a lot of people just looking for the money, this, you know, the stock, the options, where you were interviewing them and then you realize, I don't know if this person's a great tech person, but I don't know where their values are. Is that a common occurrence?
Let's see. Yeah, you know, I think I see that maybe a little bit more later on in terms of like the growth stage of
right, right. These are after you hit your friends, you're close to
right.
You get random Jack showing up, and we don't, you know, have that connection or that warm connection, and we didn't even have coffee together. And
yeah, you know, let's see. You know, I think I don't think we're like yet, you know, big enough that you know, we're kind of a destination for people solely looking for compensation. I mean, I think our compensation is like quite good, and we're definitely in a really exciting place. And certainly there are people that, you know, will index a lot on the compensation piece. Yeah, you know, I think like our comp is like pretty, you know, is pretty competitive compared to like other companies around our stage. I think like there are folks that are looking for like, you know, just kind of the highest comp possible. you know, that's not us. We you know, we base our compensation based on like benchmarks, and we're on the higher end for sure. But I think folks who are optimizing purely for compensation, you know, I think the interview around a few places, they'll probably be able to find, you know, at least like, you know, one or two places that are going to be like higher comp, and maybe they just they head there. Yeah, you know, it hasn't been like a super huge issue for us, and typically it'll just come out, you know, in comp conversations if that is like the single and only thing they're optimizing for. But you know, at our stage of the business, we're growing, you know, so quickly, and it's just like a really exciting growth stage of the company. You know, minor variations, for example, in like valuation or compensation. You know, when you think about sort of the big picture of like 5 years out, and what is the stock going to be worth like 5 years out? Like, I think it's more important to go somewhere where you really believe in the people and you think it's like a really, you know, great, really great, smart set of people to work with, as well as like really believing in sort of the direction and future of the company, rather than, you know, potentially like micro optimizing on a specific compensation offer at a point in time.
I mean, so alternatively, let's say one of your recruiters or you reach out to me directly, how do I make my candidacy stand out for you amongst all the folks you're reaching out to or that are even applying?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I'm not making a ton of individual decisions on candidates myself nowadays. Yeah, you know, I think folks who have actually spent time to understand the company, understand you know, what we do and who are excited about, for example, recruiting. And I think you know, I think especially for people earlier in their careers, they may not realize just how important hiring and, you know, the people you work with around you are to like, you know, the success of a business or even just having a workplace where you really enjoy working with people. You know, folks who do sort of understand, you know, the value of recruiting and are really excited about just building a product that individual users and individual recruiters love to use. You know, I think that kind of comes out from relatively early on in the interview process, and is something that I do think helps people stand out. Obviously, like, you know, good performance on interviews as well is you know, that that's pretty important, and it's something that we look for, obviously. Yeah, I think that's maybe the one piece that I would say that you know, we're probably like, you know, most excited about is, you know, folks who understand what we're doing, have taken a little bit of time to learn about the company, and who are just really energized by you know, building products that that recruiters love to use.
I mean, on building, so your role is quite interesting because as CTO, you lead the engineering, product, and design teams. What advice do you have for developers or other technologists who might not have gotten the chance to work so closely with design or even product? How best can they kind of work together or collaborate?
Yeah. I think, you know, both you know, both product and design, they're real experts in what they do. If you get the chance to collaborate really closely with a product manager or a designer, definitely spend, you know, time with them. I think one of the most important things is to just communicate. You know, spend time with them, talk about what you're working on, get their feedback on things. A lot of times these are, you know, potentially different perspectives to how an engineer might be thinking. But it's through that collaboration as sort of a triad that really enables great products to be built. I think that's like my primary thing is to just communicate and and spend that time talking and communicating with like your product and design partners, because it's through that deeper collaboration that you get to really, really successful products.
Are there things that you wish more like developers and technologists knew about product and design work? Are there kind of like common misconceptions you see when folks start on the team or start at GEM?
Yeah, you know, I think there's definitely like one mode of operating where you know, where each of these groups, you sort of see them as like siloed. So, you know, as an example, like, you know, the designer, you know, puts together a mock and it's their job to do that. And then as an engineer, all I do is I just implement like what they told me. And then, you know, product says, hey, here's, you know, the opportunities that we should be going after. And then I'll just blindly go and do that. And yeah, I think that's like relatively common is sort of the assumption that things are kind of black and white and it's all, you know, everyone has their individual job and then, you know, kind of comes together in a waterfall model. And eventually as the engineer, your job is to just take what people are telling you to do and then do it. But I think the reality of it, and I think the very best, you know, engineering, product and design teams are collaborating a ton. You know, product managers are taking some interest in how we're solving the problem, not only just defining it. You know, engineers are caring about the definition of the problem and they're trying to, they're participating in that conversation about what are the biggest things that we should be going after as a team. And, you know, engineers might be, you know, going and giving feedback to designers on mocks and you know, working with design in the early stages of solving the problem. And you know, similarly, design might be going to engineering and you know, getting their help in some of the early stages of our project, even in, you know, before they've you know, put together some representative mocks. And so yeah, I think that's the biggest misconception that I see. And maybe there are some companies where, you know, engineering, product and design teams are run that way, but I really do believe that the more, you know, all the groups collaborate, the better the outcome is.
Nick, on a kind of a different topic, you know, given the marquee brands that are your customers and you're very data driven, and what we're seeing now, you know, with you know, Russia invasion of Ukraine and everything going on, high inflation, are you seeing, like, can you see patterns, you know, given where you, like, you're the epicenter of it, right? You're dealing with all these people, you have, you know, access to all these recruiters, all these firms. Is everything still going according to how it was, or are you noticing changes and companies a little kind of freaked out by circumstances and maybe holding off on hiring and just, you know what I mean? What are you saying? Is this impacting things?
I haven't seen, too much yet, honestly, in terms of, you know, things affecting the economy, at least for our US-based customers. So yeah, you know, I think, for example, with the pandemic, there definitely was a point where everyone was just like, whoa, like, we gotta kind of put everything on pause and see what's going on here. I haven't seen something to that level yet, at least from my perspective.
Do you have folks working for you in kind of Eastern Europe that
we don't? Yeah, we're still, at least for GEM, we're pretty much based in the US.
Yeah, because that has to be so challenging for companies that have workers in these danger zones and trying to figure out how do we take care of them, what to do. So it's,
yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah, it's definitely, yeah, it's definitely really tough. And I've heard a few situations where, just on LinkedIn, in terms of, you know, people that I'm connected with, where they've had team members in Ukraine and
It's heartbreaking, right? It's so horrible.
Yeah. And actually, my grandparents actually moved over from Ukraine to the US. And so I'm kind of a second generation or third generation. But definitely have like a connection there. And it's definitely a tough situation for the world. So
in these tough situations, like geopolitics, pandemic, are you seeing folks using GEM in a novel way or in a way that you hadn't expected? Are folks getting creative?
So as an example, you know, through the pandemic and a lot of companies like went more full remote, they're definitely using GEM as a way to, start to hire outside of their core markets. The other area that I think was important as people moved remote from offices was just collaboration on candidates. I think, you know, in the past where you might have been able to kind of tap someone on the shoulder in the office, having a platform where you can collaborate on candidates in pipeline was, I think, important to a number of folks. And recruiting is just like a really collaborative, it's a really like team sport, I think, you know, compared to, you know, say like sales where you're primarily interacting, with one salesperson with one company. Recruiting, you have a number of different folks in the recruiting team, you have hiring managers involved. It's like a much, it's a much more collaborative process. And I think that's definitely been a pretty big way that people have been using GEM as well. I think it's still early with some of the Ukrainian crisis. I haven't seen any sort of creative uses yet, but I'll definitely be sort of keeping that for them. I'm sure there's folks using it in some ways that are likely pretty creative.
I mean, I like what you said about that, because the fact that recruiting is a very collaborative process, I also get a sense that is the kind of engineering the company culture that you have built at GEM, this kind of sense of collaboration. Was that intentional there?
Sorry, could you just repeat the beginning of that question?
Yeah, so like I get the sense like recruiting is a collaborative sport, you could say.
Yeah.
And the engineering culture, the company culture at GEM seems to be very collaborative too. Is that intentional by design?
I don't think we sort of, you know, intentionally, thought through the recruiting process and made EPD like sort of more collaborative because of that. It has ended up being like a really, I think, positive effect of starting GEM is just getting it, being able to work with recruiters. I think the best teams are very collaborative. They spend, you know, a lot of time going, you know, back and forth together and getting multiple perspectives, because I think that just creates the best product. And similarly, I think, recruiting teams are by nature very, very collaborative. And that's been, I think that's been a positive aspect of building product for recruiters, is that they're generally like really nice people and just, you know, they're collaborative by nature. And so being able to build product for recruiters is great, just because you get to interact with them a ton day in and day out. Is they're actually like a really great set of people to work with. I think potentially compared to like other sorts of people to work with, they're just, you know, by nature very nice, very collaborative, and I think, you know, our culture at GEM is a group of people that really do enjoy working together and really enjoy that sort of like, you know, healthy back and forth that builds that I think creates sort of like the best product.
But I think that's the best way to end it. Thanks so much for your time, Nick.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks to you both. I had a lot of fun.
It's our pleasure. So I'm glad, because this is really great to get the insights of, you know, someone who comes from a large tech company takes that bold move to go out, which takes guts, man. That takes a lot of courage and guts to do. Even though you said you wanted to do it since you were young kids, to do it, that's brave. And then make it happen and raise the money and build it, that's fantastic. So I think it's an inspirational story to people when they watch this. And you don't even have to be in tech to appreciate it, just in general, to say, hey, here's some guy who, you know, wanted to do something, worked hard, and he was successful. He could have stayed at Facebook the next 10, 20 years, but said, hey, I want to do something different, and went for it. And I think that's what a lot of people are looking for now, you know, getting ideas for their careers. What do I do? Do I stay in this company? Do I move? Do I take that risk? Do I pivot? Do I reinvent myself? And that's what's so cool about these kind of conversations, because it helps people who are going through that, not sure what to do, and to hear those stories. You know, it could be if somebody hears your story and go, you know what? I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? I'm going to take that leap. I'm going to make it happen. So it's really cool. So I really appreciate you being so open and transparent about your journey.
Yeah, no. Hopefully people, you know, see this and it's helpful for someone. I also think this is, you know, a big part of I think, like, sort of, you know, this Silicon Valley culture is that, you know, it's like very supportive and it's very optimistic. And I think you know, part of the circle of it is you know, is, you know, once people get to a certain stage, everyone is, like, very willing to sort of support, you know, people who are earlier stage and are still at the point where they, you know, maybe haven't started something or are thinking about it or are trying to figure out their next career moves. You know, I think through my entire career, you know, just reaching out to different people that you know, where they had journeys that I was inspired by or want to learn about, almost everyone was willing to chat, no matter, you know, sort of how senior they were or anything like that. And I think I'm super happy to be on the show, and hopefully it's helpful for someone.
It goes back to what you said earlier, that it makes sense from what you're just saying too, to kind of maybe find that if you're interested in a certain sector, to kind of go where the action is. And to get into that ecosystem, because then you can have that collaboration. You're not doing it yourself. You're not, and I guess in a day and age where we're remote work or hybrid and you're alone in your apartment, it's going to be hard to make those contacts, build a network, get noticed. So if you kind of get, whether Silicon Valley, Wall Street, wherever, to find those hubs and just go for it. And even if that means a little discomfort to picking up and moving and leaving, that's another thing that we bring up. That's something you have to consider. You know, for people who are watching, you have to think, maybe if they really need to get their career to the next level, go where the action is and build your network there.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice. And I think, sure, like, a lot of things are kind of, you know, luck or all of that, but you do have control over a number of things that can sort of increase the odds that you know you're gonna be at the right place at the right time. So
excellent. Well, once again, thank you so much, Nick. This was awesome.
Yeah. Great Excellent. To meet you, Stan. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Take care. Time. Give my regards to Steve.
Will do. All right. See you, Jack. See you, Ray.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.